And this verb is placed here to show that the saints do not have any relationship with the earthly matters. Their citizenship, their polity is in heaven. On earth will remain all those who will be condemned. We will be caught up, he says, in the clouds, like the Lord on a light cloud, which is symbolic of the divine, the heavenly form. And we will be caught up, we will be snatched up when the Lord is descending, and this meeting will take place in midair. About this meeting near, only God knows how and where. We do not need to be overly concerned about the fine details. This suffices, that the righteous will be caught up to meet the Lord. Do you see how the entire Holy Scriptures agree with the book of the Revelation and with the interpretation of our church? Christ is caught up with his ascension, and we the faithful also, being the male child, will also be caught up as well. Yes, the child was snatched up, but the woman was not. She was not caught up. The woman gave birth, and her child left before the dragon had an opportunity to grab it. What is meant here is the life of Christ on earth. While the devil orchestrates the devouring of Jesus on the cross, he becomes ready to mutilate him. He stretches him on the cross, but he did not accomplish much there. The devil was rather mutilated by the cross of Christ. With his death, he defeated death and the devil, because Christ, as a human being, showed his full obedience to the Father. And thus, what Adam failed to do was successfully accomplished by Christ. But the woman, the Theotokos, remained behind. She remained in this present life. She did not leave with Christ. She did not ascend then. But the church also stayed in the world and continues to be in the world. Yes, but now will she not become the target of persecution from the dragon? Of course. And the woman fled out in the desert, where she has a place prepared by God, and there they will be nurturing her for 1260 days. They will feed her for 1260 days. So the woman left. After she gave birth, she left. She went into the desert. There she has a place prepared by God, and they will nurture her. This nurturing suggests the presence of angels. They will take care of her for 1260 days. The woman who flees in the desert, my friends, initially happens to be the Virgin Mary, the Theotokos. How did she flee in the desert? When she was personally persecuted by Herod. She seeks refuge in Egypt, a deserted land in the area of Theognosia. Egypt was deserted, dry, out of any true knowledge. So Egypt was deserted of Theognosia. It was deserted from any true knowledge about the true God. St. Anthimos of Jerusalem writes very beautifully on this, "Behold, the Lord comes on a soft cloud, and the handcrafts of Egypt will crumble." Isaiah 19:1. So the Lord is coming seated on a light and soft cloud, and he's coming to Egypt, and when the handcrafts, the false gods made by man's hands, the idols, when they saw him, they shook, fell, and crumbled. This similar position is mentioned in the salutation service, even though it has been borrowed by a pseudoscript. But please listen. The prophecy says the Lord went to Egypt, but this prophecy was inconceivable up until the incarnation. Now we understand it. He comes to Egypt and the idols fall and crumble. How does it come on a light cloud? What is this light cloud? The arms of the Virgin Mary, the birth giver of God, the Theotokos. Her arms hugging the Lord. She is the light cloud. Therefore, the Theotokos flees from the mania of Herod, and behind Herod is the dragon who pursues her. It is noteworthy that the mother of the Messiah of Christ, the Theotokos, remains as a member of the church militant. And after the ascension of Christ, the Messiah who ascended to the heavens, the Theotokos remains on earth, even though she is also in heaven. And I will explain this in a minute. And she's persecuted by the anti-godly powers. However, she's under divine protection. How does the Theotokos remain on earth? Let's listen how this takes place. She gave her body, her flesh, to Christ, which flesh the faithful partake of. And since the faithful commune the flesh of Christ, which is her flesh, for this reason, the Panagia, the Virgin Mary, remains in the world. And she's aligned and at the same time distinguished from the church militant. And someone can see this very well in the actual practice of the church, especially when we have an autoklasia service, literally meaning the breaking of the bread or the blessing of the five loaves, and when the priest begins to use the censer to sense everyone and the loaves, then he chants this dismissal hymn, Virgin Birth Giver of God, Theotoki Parthene in Greek. And why this hymn to the ever virgin? For the reason that I've been talking to you about all along. And in the dismissal hymn of the Dormition, we chant, during the birth of Christ, you kept your virginity. And after your Dormition, you did not abandon the world or most holy birth giver of God. Now you may tell me this abandonment of the world could be ethical or allegorical, in the sense that the Theotokos, the Virgin Mary, protects the church from heaven, protects the world in an ethical sense through prayer, supports the church through her intercessions. Not so. Yes, of course she intercedes, but she stays here ontologically. She is in the church because the church itself is the body of her Son, who has her body. But if the birth giver of God, the Theotokos, is persecuted, then the faithful will be persecuted also. The first fleeing of the church, the first fleeing of the Christians, took place a little before the siege of Jerusalem during 70 AD. Eusebius of Caesarea describes for us the following in the third book, in the fifth paragraph of the fifth chapter of his ecclesiastical history. The third book is very interesting, and you may be able to find it because this volume has been published very recently. And I have not recorded the page, but it is in the third book in the fifth chapter. Let's listen to the translation very carefully. It's very important. And I quote Eusebius of Caesarea, who states, "Besides, the people of the church in Jerusalem were instructed through an oracle given by revelation to the seasoned men living there before the war to distance themselves from the city and to relocate in a city of Perea called Pelas. The believers of Christ relocated to the city since the holy men totally abandoned the royal Judaic metropolis, the city of Jerusalem, and the entire land of Judah." So the city of Pelas lied east of the Jordan River in the area of Arabia. But please pay attention, because what Eusebius of Caesarea writes to us is very significant. Please open your ears to hear this well. Shortly before the war, and this was the war enacted by the Romans, and more specifically by Vespasian against Jerusalem. In the meantime, Vespasian was nominated to be the next ruler of Rome, the next emperor, and he left his son Titus to complete the siege against Jerusalem. Titus defeated and entered the city after the siege, and the fall of Jerusalem took horrific, dreadful, most dreadful proportions. According to some of the details described by Josephus, mothers actually ate their children. This is horrible. The Christians had totally abandoned the city. No Christian was found in the city during this siege. Here, of course, the Christians remember the words of the Lord on the first plain. When you see the city of Jerusalem surrounded by the Roman armies, then know that the time of her desolation has drawn near. Then all those in Judea, let them flee to the mountains. When he says the mountains, he refers to the desert. And all those inside of her, all those who are inside the city, exit the city. So the Christians remember the words of the Lord. When they saw the movement of the Roman armies encircle Jerusalem, they all left. And to make sure that you never forget this point, I will read it again. The people of the church were instructed through a vision, by a prophecy that is, given by revelation to the spiritually seasoned men, to the elders, before the war, to distance themselves from the city. The prophetic gift has never been absent from the church. Consequently, we mentioned this at one of our previous lessons to answer some people's question. When these adverse conditions, these difficult times of the book of the Revelation are taking place, wouldn't the faithful suffer? The suffering will be minimal because God will be protecting them in a way that His wisdom knows. What is this way of God's protection? When, for example, a dreadful plague is about to commence, the faithful will be notified in a way not known to them at this moment. But at the proper time, the church will be informed and will be knowledgeable of that way. It will be revealed to the church at that opportune time. As the Roman attack was revealed to the faithful prophetically from the saints of the church, most likely the saintly priests and so on, it was revealed to them that the city would fall and they must leave. And they remember the words of the Lord. They left and they were saved. The important thing is that the entire Palestine came to seek refuge inside Jerusalem. The entire Judea. Josephus tells us that, I don't know how accurate this number may be, I can't tell you for sure, but Josephus tells us that 3 million Hebrews entered the walls of the city to be saved. It seems like God was collecting all of the Jews who chose not to believe inside the walls to have them axed. While the Christians he led outside, he instructed them to exit the city to be saved. I will now tell you about something along these lines, something that happened during my service years. It just now came to my mind. I was serving in the Air Force at the time, and I was at the base of Araxos in Peloponnesus. And in those years, it was not very possible to take a leave of absence, at least not until the affirmation. Today, soldiers are affirmed and sworn in very quickly, and they can exit the base. We were trapped inside the Araxos base for months, and we hadn't come in contact with anyone, another human being, for months. At some point, the corporal enters the door of our cabin and says, "Who would like to go to the city of Patras?" It was noontime, and we were all relaxing a bit on our beds, and we all jumped on our feet because we were all ready to go to Patras, anything to get out. Now, how would we get there? Certainly not on foot, we assumed that one of our trucks needed to go for bread provisions, for food provisions, something of that sort. But we all wished to get out of Araxos being such a desert. So we all jumped out of bed very quickly, but I was the last one, being that my bed was at the end, the very end of the cabin. So I was the last one to make it through the door. And they all made it outside except me. When I went to exit, the corporal stretches his hand in front of the door to block me. And I remember complaining. In my simplicity, I said, "Why can't I go to Patra? I also want to go to Patra." He tells me, "Listen, please listen to me. Go back to your bed." "No, I want to go to Patra." He tells me, "Listen. Go back in your bed. Do you hear?" Instead of Patras, all the others ended up scrubbing the toilets for the rest of the afternoon. I use this simple example. It just came to my mind to help you understand this point. God knows to choose and preserve and protect his people in the face of an impending destruction. Thus, my friends, let's be watchful. Let's be aware, we don't know how God will be speaking to his church for the faithful to be saved. That's why I told you to keep your mind about you, so we don't succumb to some illusion or fantasy, being that man easily becomes victimized by illusions, and the devil is quick to take advantage of this human tendency. God forbid. But we'll stay vigilant and spiritually alert. We will stay alert and will be very attentive to the voice of the church at every moment for whatever the future may bring. So the desert from this point on will be the place of refuge for the Christians who are at the receiving end of all types of pressure, persecution, whether political or cultural. Cultural persecution, when the human civilization will have reached such measure of decadence to have someone come to the point to say, "No, I can no longer remain among these people inside this type of world." This is how the desert of the early ascetics came to be. The church will seek refuge in the desert again, my friends. The desert was a necessity not only in the first centuries, but the church will seek refuge in the desert again in the last days, during the days of the Antichrist. The catacombs were utilized back then, and they will be used again, not to mention that they're already being used during our days in Orthodox lands, and this is 1980. Today in Orthodox Russia, as we read in various periodicals, if the faithful wish to celebrate a divine liturgy, a liturgy in the true sense that would fulfill the needs of the faithful, they celebrate it in the forests and in the deserts. And if you would like to know how long one of these Russian divine liturgies lasts, they uphold the typikon, or the format, of the Holy Mountain. You will be horrified, 12 to 13 hours in the woods, in the cold. This is the meaning of heroism. The church has fled to the desert once again. Again, this information is common knowledge, and it is written in newspapers, religious magazines, and periodicals. We read these things. That's where I read this information, and I'm sharing it with you. For this reason, we need to start preparing ourselves, because at some point we may be faced with such a possibility to seek refuge in remote and deserted areas. St. Andrew of Caesarea writes the following: "What was happening with the martyrs, so it will be with the Antichrist." And this we saw during the Old Testament, when the faithful took refuge in the caves, in the mountains, and in the holes of the earth to avoid the wrath of the ancient types of the Antichrist. In the Old Testament, the Antichrist was at work because the Holy Cross was also at work. I have told you this in other lessons. The uncreated energy of the Holy Cross was at work in the Old Testament, and consequently, the God-opposing powers of Satan, or the devil, were also at work. St. Paul writes about this very thing in the Epistle to the Hebrews, that the saints and the faithful went and made their abode in the caves and in the holes of the earth to be saved, of whom the world is not worthy. Did you hear? The world is not worthy, my friends, and I'm saying this because, should I tell you? Yes, I might as well tell you. One of our today's psychiatrists expressed his views about monasticism to an unfortunate young man who made it to his door. Don't pay attention to what the monks do, he says, because they feed donkeys. They're good for feeding donkeys, according to this scientist. Very nice. Please forgive me for this insertion. But you see, this is what monks do. They might as well be feeding donkeys. Well, what can you say? I am bringing this up because St. Paul says that the world is not worthy of those who seek refuge to the deserts to preserve their orthodox mindset and their faith in Jesus Christ. And St. Andrew says, "Ikos de ke tin estitin erimon," this may include the actual desert. Did you hear this? The actual desert, the real desert, not the desert in the spiritual sense, where we can live a deserted lifestyle in our home, isolated, where our home becomes like the desert. He means the actual, real desert. In one of his homilies, the theologian Mr. Sotiropoulos said this when he spoke about some of these topics of the Book of the Revelation. I believe he told you this because he also mentioned it to me, Father Athanasius, when the time comes, we will head for the mountains and the deserts. Very true indeed. As St. Andrew says, here, the actual desert. This may include the actual desert. And St. Anthimos of Jerusalem writes, "Who will give me wings like a dove so I can fly away and find rest? Behold, I traveled a long distance running away. I made this desert my abode." This psalm, according to Anthimos of Jerusalem, prophesies the fleeing and the deliverance of the righteous from the snares of the devil and their isolation and their redemption and their freedom from worldly cares, and there they will be assisted with divine aid and divine protection. As you see, my friends, this is the journey of the faithful inside history. How do you like it? If we chose to be Christians, let's praise God's holy name, because on the other side of these sufferings, at the end of this road of distress, Christ is coming. The Lord said, "After all these things that I told you, raise your heads towards heaven and wait for your redemption. Wait for your redemption from there, because your redemption will take place from heaven." The world remains ignorant of the end of history. The faithful know it. They are certain of it. Not only that, but they sense the end galloping towards us, as Mr. Bratsiotis writes in his commentary very beautifully. Osipisti, all those who are faithful, let's enter this adventurous and cross-bearing journey of the Church.
Εκνικτός αρθρίζει το πνεύμα μου προς ο Θεός, διότι φως τα προσταγματά σου επί της γης.
Και πάσαν τη ζωή ημών. Χριστό το Θεό παραθώμεθα.
Συγκυρία.
Ότι σον το κράτος και σου έστειν η βασιλεία και η δύναμη και η δόξα Πατρός και του Υιού και του Αγίου Πνεύματος νυν και αΐ και εις τους αιώνας των αιώνων.
Αμήν. Τα πάση θα σε τα
Amen.